Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Today on Vulnerable, I am welcoming Jennifer Stone. She is an amazing actress as well as an ER nurse. You may know her from Wizards of Waverly Place, and she is just an outstanding human being. So let's get into it. I'm Christy Carlson Romano, and this is the Vulnerable Podcast. Jennifer!
Hi! It's so good to see you guys.
I know, man. I mean, thank you so much. Wait, hold on.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much. Anyway, shut up. Hold on. Give me a second.
This is going well.
You are here with us.
This is going great.
Are you guys in Austin?
Yeah. So welcome. What? You good? We're good. High fives.
This is the first time we're doing it this way. It's so different.
Well, we'll be changing things. It's good to pivot in life.
It's true.
Vulnerable at home. Which I don't know a better place to be vulnerable than at home, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
I mean, we're literally all kind of post-COVID. I remember when you came to do our show, the cooking show, the Christie's Kitchen Throwback. We were filming mocktails for New Year's Eve.
Yes.
We dressed up. It was very fun. And we had talked about, I think it was before COVID, correct?
Like, yes, it was definitely
before. It was right before things got crazy.
Yeah.
And the lockdown. It must have been before the lockdown.
I don't know about y'all, but my concept of time was screwed before COVID, but after, I'm like, is it 93? Is it 2011? I have no idea what year it is.
100%.
But it had to have been, because I had started at the hospital at that time, right? I was already working.
No, you were just starting.
You were just, yeah.
Okay, so then, yeah, it had to have been before the lockdown.
Then it was the January before the March of everything hitting the fan. So it was a little bit.
Yeah, it was December.
So
yeah, right before.
I remember texting her and freaking out, even though we had just met, right?
I remember that.
And I was like, Jennifer, I have a baby and I have another baby. And this is happening. Please tell me. I was like begging her for information.
I remember.
And I even told Brennan, I was like, no, I have a text out. It was like everyone was scrapping to talk to somebody who might have credible information, right?
I got a lot of those texts from a lot of people. I still will get texts now, people being like, I put on my perfume this morning and it didn't smell the same. What does that mean? And I'm like, is it old? Like, I don't know. So I still get that every now and then. But yeah, I got that a lot from people. But it was tough because we were still figuring it out too. I mean, there was a lot of things that we did. I mean, we're still mentally, I'm not going to like get into the whole like nitty gritty of it, but we're still like mentally reeling from all of it and will be for a while because.
I mean, we can if you want to. We can.
No, and it's fine if you want to, but it's a whole rabbit hole. And it's something that I haven't fully processed, to be honest, because.
Of course.
I'm not able to.
Right.
And during all of that, I mean, we saw some really horrible things that I will never unsee and that changed me as a person. And we just had to go, you know, pronounce somebody in one room and then go to the next person in the next room. You know what I mean? So we didn't have time. We didn't have time to process any of that because we had to move on to the next person. And you know, it'll come out in ways. It's been a very interesting study in what happens when you don't process emotions. Because now, like, I'll be watching TV and an IMS commercial will come on and all of a sudden I'll start crying. I'm like, the dog just wants to be good. Or like I'll watch like Project Runway Junior and all of a sudden the 15-year-old gets kicked off and I'm like, he's too young to know rejection or like whatever. But that's like kid actor stuff too. But like,
I mean, triggered.
Totally. Lots of triggers. Yeah. But it is interesting to see. It's been a big lesson as well in what happens when you don't. Because I, especially with acting and stuff, we're constantly processing emotions. We're constantly working.
And rejection.
And rejection. But even like when you get to do what you love, you're processing emotion. And so this job is totally the opposite of like, you can't process emotion. You have to process information and care and be the perfect person that has it all together, even when everything's falling apart. So it's been a big lesson that I'm still learning and still figuring out of how to process emotion and still keep going and what that looks like. I don't know. Like I said, I don't have it figured out yet. It's something we're still all kind of reeling from, to be honest.
But I remember, you know what? The texts you sent, I remember them being very much like, take a breath.
I probably could find them on my phone. Young. Let me see if they're still there.
Like, they were very comforting.
Oh, so comforting.
You know,
I'm glad.
Immediately made me think, like, whoever's got her under their care is in good hands. You know, like you
that
have
means a lot to me. Thank you.
A very good tech side manner. So
well done. Actually, I think Jennifer, I think you bring up a really wait a minute. Can I call you Jen?
Yeah, no, most people call me Jen. It's weird. Okay. I introduce myself as Jennifer, but then all my friends call me Jen.
I get that.
Just not Jenny. I'm not Jenny.
I get it. Not Jenny.
Jenny has pom poms. I'm not Jenny. I've never had pom poms in my life. I can't jump. It's just, it's not. That's it. It's not me.
That's You've got scrubs and gloves. Like, it's a whole different thing.
That's like, I love it. That's like when people try to call me Chrissy, and I'm like, that's not accurate. That's not me. But she sounds cute, though. Chrissy sounds cute.
She sounds real
cute.
But I always tell people I don't end in Y. I don't end in Y. I'm sorry. It's just not me.
Okay. So you did bring up a really excellent point. Okay. And obviously, we're here with Jennifer Stone on Vulnerable today.
We just get into it.
We get into it.
We don't even do the intro.
I love honestly, it. We don't play by the rules. No. We don't stay in a studio. We don't stay in one state.
Independent podcast. What's up?
Independent podcast. For today. Anyway, you brought up a really cool point, actually, was that, you know, your career paths. Mm-hmm. It's interesting how much of what emotionally you've experienced in the past has benefited you in your current state, in your current career path of being in the healthcare system and sort of providing care, and not just any care. I mean, you're a nurse, you're actually speaking to people, and that's a very, I mean, do you remember when COVID was happening and everyone was saluting you and everyone was clapping, and it's like, that's not there now, and we should go into that in a minute, but really, what are you using from being a child actor as a nurse today?
It's interesting because I always, in my mind, they're very separate. But the interesting thing is they're not at all, because they've overlapped in ways I never expected them to. One of the biggest ones is empathy. I mean, you can't be a good actor and not be an empath. Like, you have to, even when you're playing a villain, you know, you have to find where they justify things, where it makes sense to them. Nobody operates in a sense of being evil, as an example, right? As an actor.
They don't think they're evil, right?
They don't think they're evil, right? Every character you approach with empathy and go, okay, where are they coming from? You know, not sympathy. Sympathy doesn't work, because sympathy, it starts to become condescending. It becomes a whole thing. But empathy
is loaded.
Different.
Yeah.
It's loaded. Mm-hmm. And so that's been a big one. And you have to approach every character and every patient the same way. You have to approach them with empathy. And it's been helpful, because with acting and just, you know, having any kind of success as a kid, you're exposed to a lot of different kinds of people. And that's been one of the biggest, like, eye-opening things too about working in an ER, especially, is you're exposed to just so, like, in a 12-hour shift, the vast amounts of people that I will meet from different walks of life. I will have a homeless guy in one room, and then I'll have the lead singer, because I, weirdly enough, my hospital's, I think I told you this last time, is right across from ABC Studios, which is another life weird thing.
Totally weird.
Which is like, so I see like Mickey on like the water tower every time when I go to work and I'm like, that's bizarre.
Cross the street to pick up your residuals, go back.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So yeah, so we get a lot of like entertainment people there. So like one room I'll have a homeless person, and like the next room I'll have like the lead singer of whatever band or whatever actor right. or whatever. So it's just interesting of seeing what separates people and also what more so what very much links them to be the same. And that's something that I think having that exposure to a lot of different people very young and having that exposure to so much empathy very young has been helpful as a crossover. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, 100%.
And you're an ER nurse, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something that really inspires me about your paths is I honestly couldn't. I mean, I like to think about what I would have done if I hadn't been an actor. And I've
landed. Were you going to say that you thought you could be a nurse?
No.
Because you were terrible at taking care of me. You are the worst.
My dad said the same thing about me. My dad, when I thought about going into nursing school, he goes, you would be a horrible nurse. And I'm like, thanks a lot, Dad.
First, like,
don't take that. Don't take that.
Thanks, Jennifer.
I'm just kidding.
I just got my nails done. They're super pointy. That's all I'm going to say.
They're really, oh, look out.
Knife hands. He taught me. Hey, so. On that one, but I still love you. And, well, what I was trying to say is this. I feel like I could have been a teacher because I do think that I've always had sort of this, like, calling, okay, which is what I'm getting at, towards children. And I learned that it sort of was unlocked for me when Disney was like, so, by the way, you're a role model for, like, millions of kids, and they're all going to start looking up to you and running up to you and watching every single thing that you do. Now, I'm not talking about the branding part that the kids all have now.
Yeah.
What I'm talking about, like, the genuineness in those children's eyes when they see you and how much they identify with you and love you. And you just, like, I didn't even have younger siblings. And people always thought of me as, like, the older sister type, which is ironic. But also, I never wanted to disappoint those kids, right? Like,
yeah.
So now that I'm a parent, and my 20s and everything is long behind me, I'm observing that I probably could have done something in relation to kids and crafting and, you know, sort of patience and nurturing. I have that even if I approach, like, stuff as a director. Like, there's just a nurturing to me. I'm not saying I'm the sweetest mom. I'm definitely not.
Well, you're great.
But I have my limits, too. With all of that in mind, okay, and all of those career paths that you've had, it's like, what was your calling? Can you have more than one calling in life?
I think so. I mean, my main passion, the thing that gets me out of bed in the morning, the thing that makes me feel the most like me is still acting. Like, that hasn't changed. Sorry, you're going to see cats just going behind
no,
me.
No, this is awesome.
you are. Like, you got a tail over here. You got a butt over so here. Amazing. Like, that's just going to happen. I'm going to be talking about, like, these serious life things and just cat accents everywhere.
And I just see this.
Uh-huh.
Like
uh-huh.
this, right? Yeah.
You're going to have it. Just taking it.
It's okay.
Over everyone. But yeah, so I still, and I've known that since I was 6 years old. I was one of those, like, weird kids that, like, the moment I did it, something that just clicked that I was like, this is what I love to do. This makes me feel like me.
Huh.
The thing was that what I didn't anticipate as a kid was the fact that the industry is so narcissistic and self-involved and that, yeah, right? So, like, that was an aspect that, of course, as a kid, like, you're never going to anticipate. So as I got into adulthood, I was like, it's not. The art of it, I love, and it still makes me feel very much like myself, and it invigorates me, but I've got to get out. I've got to have something where it's not about me. I've got to have something, and I've always had this underlying interest on, like, human sciences and science in general, and then the diabetes diagnosis got thrown in there, and so I was like, well, this is perfect, because I was like, I want to understand my body more. I want people to never have to go through, you know, negative healthcare experiences as much as I can help it. And it allows me to, because I work 3 days a week, so it allows me to be able to audition and work on acting the other four and go to the hospital and do something that's not about me for 3 days. Granted, there's a lot of naps in between.
You deserve all
of the shifts?
Naps.
How long are those shifts?
12 hours. They're 12 hours.
Listen, we need to walk the Jennifer Stone path, if you will.
Yeah.
How did we get started?
Sure.
Like, what? So you said you expressed interest
in
acting.
At 6 years old.
Like, super young. When did it really, like, become like, okay, that's it, I'm going for it. And were your parents supportive? How did that all work?
My mom was always really supportive. My dad, I'll be honest, he's a very practical man. And he loves me very much. And he just wants the best for me. And he just didn't have the same, like, foresight. I don't know what it was, because I mean, I'm not a parent. I can't put myself in those shoes, and I'm not even going to try to, because I see kids and I'm like, I don't know what to do with them. Every time I have pediatric patients, I'm like they freak me out. Kids freak me out.
You got to do the happy hat dance that we did on my cooking show. Do that.
They don't know what that is. They're like, they want Paw Patrol. Right. They want stuff that I'm like, I don't.
Yeah, the kids. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I've had to start IVs in kids. It's weird. Like, I'm just like, ugh. It's hard. Like, yeah, it's kids freak me out.
They freak me out too. And I have two of them.
Hey, but you're nailing it. You're doing great.
Thanks.
But yeah, so I mean, my dad is a very practical man, and he just didn't see it. And so he was not the most supportive early on. God bless my mother. She was supportive from day one, because I believe there were some things that she wanted to do as a kid, and her parents were very practical and did not let her do. And she's always had that part of her that was just like, what would have happened if I got to do those things? And so I think because of that, she always, with my brother and I, just thought, well, whatever you want to do, as long as you put in the work and you want to do it and you're having a good time and whatever, I will support that. And so she did, and went above and beyond with me and drove me out to California from like 9 years old for like 6 months out of the year back and forth.
And where was home?
Texas. Come on. Oh. Texas.
Yeah, she was here not too long ago. I tried to get her to come and visit us.
I know. I was only there for like a week though for Christmas. So I had to go to my dad's.
That's nice.
Farm, so.
Oh.
Yeah. So we had some redneck time. but yeah, so my mom was really supportive, and it was just something that it was weird. It was always, my mom's always implemented that it's not who I am, it's what I do. And so I've always had a clear differentiation between those two.
It's very healthy.
It's very healthy. And she instilled that into me really early. But it's just always been like my catharsis. It's always been the thing, how I express myself. Like, even from a very young age, it's been something that I have gotten things out with and like worked through things. It's been like more effective to me than any therapist I've ever gone to.
Really?
Yeah. Like, it's very cathartic for me, because I find a lot.
You seem to have a very healthy relationship with it.
Yeah,
that's why you get catharsis.
So wait, when you say that your mom was talking to your brother as well about sort of achieving things and not sort of leaving them, what was he doing that she kind of promoted him to do? Was it acting as well?
Well, he was how I got into acting, because he was like addicted to video games. And my mom said one summer, like, you're not going to play video games all summer. So he like found this like theater camp, and I was the little sister that got dragged to theater camp, and I got into it because of him. And then over the years, yeah, he like just lost interest and wasn't really into it.
Yeah. What does he do now?
He's a history teacher.
Okay.
Yeah. So he was always really into history. And so my mom and dad really helped like and promoted him, like whatever history books or whatever, like, you know, vacations to like historical sites or museums or, you know, whatever. They wanted him to be able to go to those things and do those things. Hmm. And so, yeah, because history's always been his thing. Yeah, we went to Europe once, and all of like the, going to like the beaches of Normandy, he was just like salivating, you know, like we always warn people, we're like, don't talk about World War II with Chris, because you won't stop talking about World War II. Like, it's, he's one of those, like, if you want to talk about it for the whole time you're here, great. But like,
it's like, you know, it's like getting into a conversation with a crypto bro. Like,
totally,
you know what I mean?
Totally. It's the same thing. Yeah. Yeah.
What's the age difference between you guys?
It's 5 years.
Okay.
So this is interesting to me. And also, I want to say kudos to your mom and your dad, even just for kind of not standing in the way, because that can happen. And then there can be such a displacement in the family that I do find that that's actually kind of something that has happened to me. And it's all a chronic problem, too. Like, it happened even worse over time, where the siblings kind of didn't have enough time together. And then eventually we kind of just like drifted apart. It's a real hard thing to live with. And I've been seeing it the more I'm talking about just, you know, the paths and the genesis, the different people. We've had Alison Stoner on, and it's interesting.
Who I love.
I know. And she's one of the most positive people in the world.
She's the best.
And of course, her experiences was very different. And I feel like with movement, I feel like Alison touches into something that you were talking about, where you're like, it's my catharsis to act. Whereas with her, I think it's to move. And for your brother, it's to talk about World War II, you know? And so, I mean, what would you say to people like us parents who have these little girls that we would really only want them to have the best experience even starting in anything media related. Like, we've talked about it and been like, oh, should we wait for them to come to us and be like, this is what we want? You're a great example of somebody who really, it's giving them life to do this, whether they have rejection or not, and also has a balance of perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
Should we get our kids in the biz?
So
stop.
I'm, to be perfectly honest, because I've thought about that a lot too. I think it's inevitable anybody that was a kid actor, I think that's a thought that's inevitably going to come in their mind of like, if I ever had kids, would I put them in this? And I think the best thing that my mom ever did was she let me drive the train, so to speak. So it was never about her. She's still to this day, like, I'm almost 30, and she still to this day is like, are you sure you don't want to just quit? It's a really crappy business, like, you know. And when I was a kid, she was like, are you sure you don't want to just quit? We can go home and you can play soccer, yeah. And like, it's yeah. fine. Like, so it was never, it was, because I was around, and I'm sure you were too, around so many kids that like, they were going to be the breadwinner. Yeah. They were living vicariously through their kid. Yeah. And those were the ones where you just really see them get screwed up because it's just not a natural dynamic. And so what I applaud my mom for doing is the fact that she really paid attention to what I was interested in, what my brother was interested in. She let us kind of lead where we wanted to go and then helped us go there. That was what she
was
did.
Your advocate.
She was my advocate. Yeah, she never put thoughts into my head. And she even like auditions, like I had, I was a very confident kid to a fault sometimes where like I, before I had any right to be like, oh, I'm going to pick my parts. I like in my head, I was like, oh, well, this is beneath me, which was stupid. I was like 7. And like, you know what I mean? So I had no right to think that way.
That's
but
amazing.
For some reason I did.
You actually did have, that's awesome.
I'm never saying zoinks. Sorry.
Well, but yeah. Well, and it's so funny because I used to like, even with Disney Channel, because like I, in my head was like, I'm a dramatic theater actor. I came from theater. So like, even like, I remember a few Disney Channel auditions when I was like younger, like maybe like 10 or something, where I would get so upset because I'm like, this is so cheesy. I don't want to do this. Like, you know what I mean? Just having such like an ego about it.
You get in your head about it. Yeah.
Totally. And then I had an acting coach that helped me like change my perspective on what it was, which was really helpful. But she would like get on to me. I can tell you what that is in a second. But she would get on to me because like she would say, she's like, look, you know, I've made a lot of sacrifices being away from your brother and your dad to be here for you. All I'm asking is that you do your best. If you're not going to memorize your lines, that's fine. You don't have to. If you don't want to go out on this audition, that's fine. But we're going to quit because it's, you know, you can't pick and choose. It's not a, oh, today I want to do my best, tomorrow I don't. If you're going to do it, you're going to do it 100%. And I, you know, and I appreciate that because you know, I mean, you do like some of the cheesy movies you do and things like that. You know, some people show up and they phone it in. And that instilled in me this thing of like, if I'm going to show up, I'm going to do it 100%. I'm never going to come and be there and be like, oh, this is a paycheck or oh, this is whatever. It's like, no, people are showing up. It's a job for people. You know what I mean? And some people may phone it in. I'm not responsible for that. But people are making sacrifices to be here. And so if I'm going to be here, I'm going to give my 100% for today. That's and so that was a really helpful like thing. So she kept me accountable as well as being supportive. It wasn't just like a, you're great, let's go kind of thing.
That was your mom, right? I just want to make sure. Mm-hmm. You're not talking about the acting teacher. Okay. Yeah.
No, my acting teacher just gave me a great like perspective on genre versus character and how just really irrelevant that is ultimately.
Oh, I'm so curious. I think I wrote a paper about that.
Did you? Oh, I want to hear about this paper.
I don't remember it.
Oh.
That was a useless anecdote.
That was a really great story. Tell it again. No, so she told me because I remember I came to her. God bless her for doing this. She's a great acting teacher. But I came to her with this like Disney audition. And I had such an attitude about it. And I was like, I don't want to do this. Like, it's so cheesy and it's so formulaic and blah, 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 blah. And she's like, you know, Jen, she's like, maybe you don't want to do it because you're afraid of it because it's not something you're comfortable doing and you should embrace the challenge of it.
Hmm.
The challenge is going, this is an over-the-top person, but how do I make it real? Mm-hmm. How do I make this over-the-top character grounded in reality and make it something that people can relate to? And she's like, get over your BS. Get over your attitude and find the challenge in it. And that was when I actually started, you know, I booked with Disney, started working with them and everything because I started to see it as a challenge of going, how do I take this over the top not grounded in reality character and make it something mm-hmm. grounded in reality.
That, I think a lot of people have that kind of thought process where they're trying to square up like pretension and practicality. Like, for example, mm-hmm. like I went to Columbia, then I went to AFI for my master's. And at AFI, like no one writes a comedy. You know what I mean? Like nobody makes a comedy when you're at AFI. Like everything has to be like some insanely dramatic story. And I fell into the groove of that. And like the ego just got so swollen. Mm-hmm. Like while you're there, because you're like, I'm at the best film school in the world, blah, blah, blah. And then I think about like maybe 2-3 years went by and I'm like, well, nothing's selling. Like, you know what I mean? And maybe people go to the movies to be entertained. And like, although I have this specific, you know, stuff that I may like more than, let's say, like a Disney Channel show or something, everything serves a different demo, right? There are people that mm-hmm. get value out of different shows.
Yeah.
Like Christy, before she was on Even Stevens and all, I mean, she was doing Broadway. She was in Woody Allen movie. I mean, now Woody Allen's persona non grata. But like, but she was on the indie New York actor path as a kid,
right, right.
You know, and then ended up going Disney. And like, I've thought about it before. Like, I wonder what would have happened to Christy if she would have been there. And it's like, well, not as many people might know who Christy is today. Maybe it wouldn't have presented all these opportunities and like lessons.
I would have been a teacher.
You would have been a teacher. But like, I think that's pretty like wise for a kid, is my point behind all of this. Like at such a young age to embrace that, because I was definitely, even like when I was younger, my taste in music and everything, I think you're just so thick-headed and think you know so much when you're young. It usually takes years for people to get there. So that's pretty impressive that you had somebody who can get through to you at that age. Like really good parenting and teaching.
Yeah, I was lucky. I had a lot of good influences, and I was very fortunate in that.
Well, and you took the advice. More important.
Well, I mean, there were a lot of times I didn't, that I'm not talking about. So
it's not a straight path, right?
No, not at all. There were many times I'm surprised as a teenager my mom didn't leave me by the side of the road. But, I mean, I would have. I was like, God, I was a piece of trash when I was a teenager. It was just such an attitude. No, not, I mean, you know what I mean, though.
So much
like,
to
you
look
just.
Forward to. I know.
Every teenager's a piece of trash. That's true.
I know.
Yeah. Like, they're just all like know it all. Like, yeah. I've had teenage patients that literally will tell me stuff that I'm like, just shut up and sit still. Like, they're the worst. Because they think they know everything and they know nothing.
Yeah.
And they start telling you about life. And you're like, you're brand new. Get out of here. But you do. When you're at that, there's this weird ego that comes with being a teenager. So I don't know why that was the stuff that seeped in. But I'm grateful that it was. Maybe by the grace of God. I don't know. But but for whatever reason, that sunk in. But you make a great point about how, for whatever reason, there's this like stigma about like, oh, great art has to be serious. But if you think about it, it's always been this battle between art and commerce, right? Ever since like the beginning of show business back in like the, you know, 1910s, 1920s. And it's always been that struggle. And the interesting thing is if you look at like the movies that are nominated for Oscars, right? Somebody else said this once. They said, how many times have you gone back and rewatched The Artist?
Never.
Never.
Right? Like you saw it the one time and it was like, oh, great.
I didn't even watch that.
Totally.
I get it.
Or like The Father with Anthony Hopkins. Beautiful movie. Yeah. It's not a movie you're going to go back when you have a crappy day because it's just going to make you feel crappier. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
And so it's this thing of like what you, that point that you got to too, of taking a step back and going, okay, I'm doing this as a catharsis or an expression or for validation or whatever reason people do it for. I know too many people that do it for validation, but which is just a black hole of
we do need to
despair.
Get it, actually, but go ahead.
Yeah, we do, because like the whole, you have to let go of that real fast, or at least in my opinion. But for whatever reason you're doing it, you also have to like ask yourself what people are getting from it, and you know, a lot of times it's just joy or escapism, and that's something that's so great about Disney Channel, or what's so great about comedies, or even horror movies. Like you ask about like a selling, or not asking, but talking about like selling a project. Like horror movies are so easy to sell because they're cheaper and people love them because they're an absolute escape, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there's merit in that. It doesn't always have to be gloom, despair, and everyone dying and having Alzheimer's, you know?
Well, and also there's legacy. Sorry, I rarely every AFI short film ever made.
I had a sixth sense of humor before nursing, and nursing has just ruined me.
Oh, like, my let's go. Sense of we'll humor go. We'll go tit for tat horrible. Over here.
Beautiful. Wait, do you guys have any jokes you can
first,
tell?
First of all, you're drinking a 100 gallon. I don't know.
That's what, the biggest.
It's, I could kill a man with this one. It's huge.
It's a giant water bottle she's drinking.
That is, yes.
And I got to say, I will even take your advice more now that you actually do stay hydrated. You know your shit. This is crazy.
A water bottle and a weapon. Like, it's great.
There you go.
Yes.
Have them both.
You can put that
on
your
I've been looking online for less abrasive water bottles because it's a very aggressive one.
No, I like it. Going strong.
Usually the see-through ones, I feel like, are a lot less like, you know, the ones where they have the little lines on it and they say, keep going.
What the hell is that?
I was just about to say, I hate those so much because I find them so...
The sound of it alone.
I hate them so much. Do you know how many times I find a water bottle online? Like, it's been like a month-long thing that I've been like looking for a water bottle. And this is stupid in like adulthood that you're like, I've been looking for the perfect water bottle. For a month.
No, it's the real, it's the way.
And I'll see one. I'm like, this one's great. And then on the freaking back, it has 8 a.m. You got this. 10 a.m.
Oh, no.
Let's go. And I'm like, get the hell out of here, you condescending ghostwriter. Like, God, like, shut up. Like, I hate it so much. It's like the live, laugh, love of water bottles. I hate it.
Oh, have you ever seen the breakdown of the live, laugh, love?
There's a TikTok.
Oh my God, it's
which,
amazing.
By the way, Jennifer, you're on TikTok, right?
Yeah.
I think you were on TikTok before I was.
Yeah. I was, and then I was like, okay, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it 100%. So I've like been trying to like actually commit to it rather than just being like, I don't know what this is, which is
I wanted to make a fake Instagram account that was like bullshit motivation. Where I was like telling people to do all this stupid and terrible shit. Like, I'm like, this would be so great.
Yeah, yeah.
Just be like, don't worry, you got this. No, you don't. You're a fucking idiot. Like, for listening to this guy. Just like, come on. It's just so ridiculous.
Oh,
anyway.
My God. I didn't get a job once because this director gave the feedback that I was rude and disrespectful because I cut him off when he was giving me, like, direction. Which I was like, well, blessing in disguise. I don't have to work with whatever.
Oh, that sounds good.
Was it over Zoom?
You know what I mean? No, this was years ago. This was like when I was like 16, maybe,
okay.
Which I'm like, it was also 16-year-old, like get over yourself. But I didn't even realize I cut people off until that point because in my family, we're so just like.
Stack it up.
Yeah. That if you don't cut people off, you don't speak. You're just like mute in the corner. So like, it's so hard for me to not like talk that way because that's just how I've always been like raised to communicate. So it's something I am working on, but it's hard.
Oh, no, please don't work on it. Please don't work on it. That sounds awesome to be able to now know that she's okay with this.
There's nothing worse than someone sitting there patiently and going like this.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and like they let the dead air seep in. I'm like, oh, fuck, we got to fill it with something.
Brendan, you know that that's not true.
People have done that?
Oh, yeah.
So when Brendan and I met, admittedly, okay, when talking about being triggered and whatnot, okay.
What the fuck is happening?
No, wait, hold on. Okay. Let me, did you stop?
I will say, so, like, as a bystander hearing when Brendan and I met, talking about being triggered was a terrible, like, two things to put together in a sentence.
No, what I'm saying is that he helped me through something because I'm the youngest in a Sicilian family. And nobody listened to the point where I had no opinion whatsoever.
Yeah.
And so when he met me, I would get super weird and awkward in conversations with people.
God.
So when you talk about...
But I loved you through it all.
Yeah. So he was the first person to really tell me who I was without me really, like, understanding it. And he did it in a very, like, direct way. But he did it with love.
Yeah.
And, like, I was offended at first because, you know, coming from L.A., I was like, why does this feel like feedback that I'm getting from an audition? Like, why is he telling me, like, you know, when you're in front of this person, you really shouldn't laugh hysterically like you're in some LSD, like, trip or something. And it's just because I didn't like dead air. It's because I didn't like dead air. So I found it ironic that you're saying that it's nothing worse than somebody listening.
What it was is that it's not just that with your family. It's that it's like a cacophony of non sequiturs that builds to nothing.
Oh, and also, so like, most times a fight.
That's one of my favorite words, by the way. So well done.
Non sequitur.
Cacophony.
Oh, no.
I love it.
Oh, cacophony.
I love cacophony.
It's just like, brrr, and it's rapid fire getting, but not in like a pleasurable way. No offense to your family who might be listening. It's just that, like, I don't think you ever got to get your point across, your point of view. So you'd be like, well, if I shout it from the rooftops, like, I'll just shout any word, lamp. And it's like, well, that didn't fit into the conversation, but okay, you're here. Like, you know, like, Yeah. But now you're better now. Yeah. Anyway, continue.
Crazy Italian family.
You were never bad, by the way. No, I just don't think, like, you ever had a chance to get a word in edgewise.
Yes.
Like she's saying. Like, you just never.
No, but it. What do you think?
No, but you do. Hearing you say that is actually really refreshing, because I don't think it is something that's talked about a lot, of, like, this kind of, like, growing up, this thing feeling okay to be heard, but also finding this balance of being okay to be still and be silent. Because there does seem to be this, like, either or thing of, like, you're either the life of the party, you're always heard by everybody, and you're just, like, shouting lamp from the rooftop, or you're sitting in the corner and you're kind of the wallflower.
Right.
There seem to be these two, like, stereotypes, right? And I think that there's a place, like, especially, I mean, for human beings in general, but I do think, I mean, I can only speak from my experience. I've never been a man, but, like, as a woman, you know, there is a lot about being heard and also feeling okay being silent and still, and finding peace and calm in that too, and finding the balance between the two. It's okay to be both, because I felt that too, that kind of pressure to either be one or the other in my life.
Yeah.
And of either, like, oh, I have to be, like, quiet and demure, or I have to be loud and I have to get my point across and I have to be heard and whatever. And I think that it's okay to be both at different times.
Yep.
And finding that place of, like, okay, if I do have something that a point I really want to make, it's okay to be assertive but not aggressive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
I don't know if I'm making that exactly as clear as I'd like
totally
to,
clear.
But, like, it is an interesting conversation about balance and presence and being.
And also to the point of what we were talking about with teenagers feeling so moody, because they have this thing going around on TikTok called main character energy, where, like, you know, generally the Gen Z generation wants to feel heard. They feel very unheard.
Yeah.
You know, the climate change crisis for them is very real. So much of their life is about branding and being the main character and figuring out art and commerce, like what we've been talking about throughout. And it's like they are struggling very much with that balance. And so somebody who has so much perspective and so many different career paths, some would even say are completely the opposite of one another. So how do you decompress from taking on so many different burdens? I mean, how do you, besides the acting, and we know that's cathartic,
yeah.
But what does a vacation look like for you?
Yeah, how do you let stuff from the ER go?
You know, that's an excellent question, and I don't exactly have an answer for you yet, because it's something that I felt like I had a pretty good solid feel on, like, how I process things and how I worked through things before I started nursing and, like, before the pandemic. And then a lot of that went away because during the pandemic, either because it wasn't available, so, like, things that I could go out and do, you couldn't go out anymore and do them, right? Or, you know, you couldn't see people that, you know, were really healing presences or what have you. And then also too, like, things I would do, like drawing or writing or reading, or I didn't have the energy to do. Like, literally I'd come home and I'd just, like, pass out. Because also I went from, I switched to day shift, but I was working night shift when I started. So, like, my days off, I was, like, reflipping, like, my days and nights. And
yeah, it was like shooting a night shoot.
Totally. Absolutely. And which I'd done before, but, you know, it's very different. But it's something that I'm still working on, to be perfectly honest. I'm still working on how I process things, which is why I'm still crying at Project Runway Junior. Because for 2+ years, I got so used to being like, I got to push that down and then I'll get to it later, because I cannot right now. I'm not able to. Now the challenge I'm having, and I wouldn't be surprised if other healthcare workers have had the same thing, but I'm having a hard time now stopping and going, okay, what do you feel right now? What are you going through right now? Mm-hmm. What do you need right now? So I'm having a hard time kind of tapping back in to what I need and what I'm feeling, because for so long I was going, you're fine. It's fine. Just put it away and you'll get to it later. You'll get to it that later and that'll be fine. And not getting it out in any way. So to be perfectly honest, I'm still unpacking that. My mom's coming in town. We're going to Joshua Tree. That's the vacation I'm taking soon. Yay, great.
Aww,
but, like, as far as, like, long-term unpacking things, you know, I'm still figuring that part out.
So you're a little numb to it right now.
A little bit.
But is there anything that people are doing in the actual hospitals? Are they doing meetups? Are they doing healing, like, meditations together? Like, is there anything that you might suggest to the healthcare community? I mean, where are your advocates, you know?
That's a great question. You know, and that's been something that has been an unfortunate byproduct of working in healthcare, is you see a lot of the flaws.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot that goes on that is not okay. And there aren't a lot of advocates, especially for like mental health.
Yeah.
I remember like in the midst of the pandemic, you know, I got, well, if you want like one free healthcare session, you can get one and then they'll start taking it out of your paycheck. And it was just like, well, okay. And it was like right next to like HR and like, it just it was not great. Like it just wasn't.
Right.
So a lot of my coworkers have been struggling with the same thing of figuring out. I mean, we have like unions. Some hospitals are unionized and mine is as well, but there's limits there. You know what I mean? It's like with SAG-AFTRA, right? There's limits there. There's things that you would love for them to monitor and to have, you know, barriers on. I was talking to a friend of mine about like how like self-tapes, like how they have all these parameters now of like, okay, tomorrow I need 17 pages. And it's like, no, you can't do that. But there's parameter on it right now.
Right.
And so like that's something too. Like,
can we just tell the audience what you mean by that? I don't know if they'll know exactly what
you mean. Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Sure.
So like with self-tapes, for those that don't know, like so they'll have an audition. And especially since the pandemic, those have become way more popular. So instead of going to a casting office, you'll put yourself on tape doing the audition with like two scenes and a reader to basically give them the idea of the audition. But some of the challenges of that is because there's no like parameters of like, okay, you can only do 10 pages. There has to be a 48-hour turnaround of like the tape is due in 48 hours. They can give you any number of pages, any amount of dialogue, and it can be due tomorrow or in 6 hours. You know, I mean, tomorrow is not dramatic, but like,
they're not respecting your personal life. Yeah,
totally. I got home from 3 shifts in a row and one was a really tough shift. And and I was excited about them, but my manager texted me and she's like, you've got these two great auditions. And I got them. And one of them was like 10 pages and they were both due like boom, boom, back to back. And and I worked the 2 days that they were due. So I had to get them done. Like one of them, I had to get done the next day and then the one the day after. So I really had a day and 2 days to work on them. Like two totally different characters. One was 10 pages. The other one, I think it was like 5 or 6 and there was like monologue, monologue, monologue. Like it was just, and I literally just like, I just sat and I was just like, I'm gonna have a quick cry after my shift. And then I'm gonna start memorizing these lines.
Like, oh man.
And so, but that's the thing is, it's just like, you know, I know I'm not the only one that's working. Like, you know, actors have to bartend, they have to wait tables and that kind of thing. So just like, you know, unions in any capacity have their limits of what they can do. It's the same thing there. So there's not as much as there should be as far as taking care of healthcare providers in a lot of different areas, to be honest.
I'm going to interject real quick. While they do work and they bartend and they wait tables, they're not facing down death.
The stakes are very high.
The stakes are very different. Yeah. And working the kind of shifts you're working, still, you know, credence and give them credit for what they're doing. But
the service industry has been through a lot,
and
especially the people who rely on the service industry as their main go-to, like, employment, which actors definitely were leaning on the service industry for decades and decades here. And now if they couldn't do that, I'm sure that they were suffering.
My joke is that there are a lot of parallels. The nursing is kind of the service industry with bodily fluids. That's my like ongoing joke.
Well, you have to have, I imagine, a pretty thick skin to be able to do it. I guess I could somewhat relate it to my time in the Marines. Like you definitely had to be, you had to just turn stuff off, right? And then you, unfortunately, at least in my experience, that does come up. It bruises, gets to the top, right? At some point you got to deal with it. So the cry before the audition, probably good. But what I was going to say is, how do your reps, right? Your representatives, your manager, agent, et cetera, how do they feel about what you do? And like, are they pretty supportive of your nursing career?
I've had reps in the past that haven't gotten it, especially because like I had to take time off like with my diabetes diagnosis and trying to figure that over the 4 years that took and then time to go to nursing school. And so of course there were reps that like, we don't get what you're doing, which is fine. A lot of people don't. I still have people all the time. They're like, she quit acting to become a nurse. And I'm like, no, I didn't. But thank you. You know, but my manager that I have now is, God bless her. She's very, very supportive. And she gets the fact that like, I need to do both. And she respects that. Like I just had an audition that they wanted the 24-hour turnaround. And of course she tries to make it work of like, is there any way that you can possibly get this in? And I just said to her, I was like, look, I'm not going to send out a crappy tape. I'm not going to send out a crappy audition. Like, yeah, sure. I could go home after working 12 hours, throw some makeup on, cold read this, and it's going to look like crap. And I don't want to do that. You know, I would rather not send in an audition and not leave any impression than send in an audition and leave a bad impression. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like, so she's understanding when it comes to that kind of thing, which I really appreciate. And it's hugely helpful of trying to balance both. And I don't think it would be possible without, you know, a representation that got that. And I know I'm lucky to have that.
Have you had representation that hasn't gotten that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So how did you set your boundaries? Because I feel like there's so much, and I don't know if you can speak to this fear in our side of the industry. There's so much fear to like leave LA. There's so much fear to like speak up for oneself and be their own advocate. And then, of course, that affects all ages and races and genders and everybody. I feel like it's a blind kind of fear that people have in the industry, because if they speak up for themselves or have any kind of point of view that might cause production more time or whatever, even not even while working, but even in the casting process.
Yeah.
If there's any deviation, you're considered an issue. And while some people can be a little tasteless in sort of setting their boundaries in a way that's sort of disrespectful to others, I think that a lot gets buried under the rug. And then I think there's this culture of fear, so that people, like what we were just talking about, they don't even want to interject in a room full of people talking. They kind of just like, they stop having the opinion.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people, I would say myself included, once you stop speaking up or even trying to think of having sort of a narrative about something, it just, your passion for a lot of it dies. It dies away.
Mm-hmm. So what are you asking her?
So basically what I'm saying is like, in my experience, it's been very hard to find a way to sort of stand up to the industry at large. But what I'm specifically talking about is the casting structure, the auditioning process, the agents, the managers. If you have your own opinion about things, they kind of label you as sort of like high maintenance.
Difficult. And if you're a girl, you're a bitch.
Yes. Yeah. And then you just don't get the auditions. So what I love about this is that you are getting the auditions and you're still actively, because there's a lot of people who don't even get those calls.
And I felt that. I felt that. And I've been the person who doesn't speak up in the corner and forgets what my voice sounds like. Because you're right, after so long of not speaking up and being afraid to not be the people pleaser who's totally pleasant, everybody loves on set and it's just so great to work with, so they'll ask you back.
Right.
You know, you get tired of that and you're like, I don't even know, am I even myself on set anymore? Like, what am I doing? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, so yeah, I've definitely been that person, to the person where I just smile until my cheeks hurt in the corner and it's BS, right? And
And
I've been the person that's afraid to be honest about like, look, I'm going through this in my life. I can't jump, hop and skip at this point, because it is an industry that wants you to jump, hop and skip all the time. And if you're not going to, someone else will. And it's something that I, like with my diabetes, I didn't tell people for the longest time because I was horrified that they were going to find it to be something that could delay shooting or be a problem or, you know what I mean? Like it's, well, when I was being diagnosed, it was hard because like I was still going through a lot of the symptoms that now I don't have, but at the time I did and didn't know if I was going to have forever. And it, you know, I would get stuff like, well, she doesn't look connected in the room. And I think I told you this when I saw you for the Christie's Kitchen of like, yeah, because I couldn't, like, I lost my eyesight. Like, yeah, of course I wasn't connecting in the room because I couldn't see you. Like, I was doing my best to like fix my eyes where they were supposed to be. But I couldn't, like, your face looked blurry to me. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
it was stuff
like that, you know, that I was afraid to seem like, oh, I'm so sorry you're going through that, but we've gone another way kind of thing. Where like, it's all that tiptoe around the tulips nonsense. Right. But I reached a point where I just was like, you know, I'm so sick of being everything for everybody and nothing for myself, that I got to the point that I was like, you know, I will give it my all when I'm able to give it my all. But if I can't, I'm going to say so. And I'm going to say, look, I am not in a great place. I am not in a spot where this is going to be my best for today. And so I can't. Like with that audition the other day, I was like, I can't. If there was a way that I could and give you my best, I would, but I can't. It's in the middle of two shifts. It's not possible. You know, and so that's the thing. I've gotten a lot better about saying no and saying no tactfully, not being like, no, I can't believe that they would want to do a turnaround like this. Like, not like that. Just being like, look, can I get an extension? Right. If I have an audition that's due this day, because how many times have you had an audition that is due tomorrow and all of a sudden your friend is auditioning for it next week?
Yes,
and you're
exactly.
like, why did I kill myself to get it done in 24 right. hours and they're still doing it next week? So I'm a big fan of being like, hey, is there any way I can get it to them? Like the first day I can possibly do it to my best ability. Mm-hmm. And if they say no, they say no. And I have to, and I've gotten to the point where I'm okay with that. It's not my project. It wasn't meant to be. That's okay. And I let it go.
Would you say that your diabetes diagnosis was one of the most impactful growth moments that you've had?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The diabetes itself was something that was a catalyst for a lot of things. Growth in the sense of like taking care of myself and having to prioritize myself physically was its biggest thing. But as far as stepping outside of myself, having perspective, and then leading me to nursing and having that be a whole, you know, different thing has been life-changing. It's very, very life-changing.
So wait, I don't know if we ever really talked into, so you got the diabetes diagnosis. You probably struggled with that for a bit and you were still working with Disney and whatnot. But then how did you decide? Did you just wake up and say, I'm going to go to school for this? Or
for nursing, you mean?
Well, yeah, I got diagnosed after Disney, actually.
Okay.
Oh. Which is interesting because like hindsight's 2020, right? So like when I was working in Wizards, I was always like, it was a joke of like, let's take a picture of Jennifer sleeping on this prop, this set, whatever. Like I was always asleep on something, which now I'm like, oh, it's because my blood sugars were really high. So I just was like conked out like after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
But no, so I was diagnosed when I was 20 and the show ended when I was 18. So I was at the point where I was like, okay, I'm ready to do like be an adult, like go out of that. Like in my mind, I was like, cool, I did my Disney Channel show. I'm going to go do my Freeform show. Then I'll have my ABC show. Like it had nothing with how I was
the
talking
path,
about.
The
you
path.
Know? Yeah. The path. The Disney path. Like just such nonsense. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right, right.
I don't know what I was thinking. But and then God was like, pump the brakes. Absolutely not. So yeah, when I was 20, I started losing my eyesight, getting really tired, like going to the grocery store would like wipe me out. I gained like 60 pounds in 2 months. Wow. So my back and my knees like got blown out. I still have issues like with my knees and like my I still have stuff that's like residual from putting that much weight on that fast. Which again, talking about like the fear in the industry, like you can't be big. You know what I mean? Like I struggled with eating disorders when I was a kid and like having like agents when I was like 13, like, hey, this is how you do a push-up, like visiting them in the office
because
that was there. Oh, yeah. Like, no, but that was their way of saying, like, hey, you need to lose weight. Like,
but you knew what it meant.
You know that coded
language. I knew what it meant. Like, and I had eating disorder shit, like, when I, excuse my French, when I was, like, 11, 12. And so when I was 13, like, I was trying really hard to come out of that. And I remember, it was the most absurd thing I've ever seen a grown woman do in my entire life. And that was another thing that it came from another woman that I was like, this industry is so screwed up.
Yeah.
She got down in a pencil skirt, a blazer, and heels.
Oh, God.
It was the most absurd. It took me a second, like, being like, what the hell is she doing? But, yeah, she got down on the floor in her office and was like, I'm doing these new push-ups. They're great. And, like, starts doing these, like, push-ups in her thing. And I just was like, it took me, like, I looked at my mom and, like, looked at her. And I was just like, I don't understand what's happening right now. And then it was, like, on the car on the drive home that I was like, oh, okay.
That's traumatizing. It's
hold on.
It's something out of like Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, for sure.
It's like swimming with sharks, absurdist.
Absolutely, yeah.
Did this person, this problem person, get me started?
We'll find her.
Tell me her name, please.
No, I won't.
I know. But did she know that you were having the eating disorder the year or two prior?
No. Okay. No, I was never open. I mean, my mom didn't even know at
Still
that point.
Good.
My mom didn't know until I was like, later teens, almost an adult. I have not been open about that publicly until like maybe the last like year or so, just because I've gotten to the point now where I'm like, it's only beneficial to be honest about those kind of things, you know, because that was part of, again, circling back to like the fear of, and not feeling like you can speak. It's there's such a fear and debilitating in nature of feeling isolated and alone in something.
Yes.
And I feel like it's so detrimental to make people feel like something is so isolated within themselves. Like they're the only person that ever goes through this. They're the only person that ever experiences this. And it's so not true. So that's where I got to a point where I was just like, you know, I don't have any vanity about talking about things like that. Like who cares? You know what I mean? About like my own personal stuff.
We're all a lot more alike than we are different, I think. And like, it mm-hmm. is really encouraging that you would do that, because now people can find solace in it and hopefully it helps them, you know?
Yeah, I hope so.
I'm curious. When you're talking about empathy earlier, Christy coined this term, I believe you coined it, a narcissistic purgatory. Like, that's kind of what Hollywood is.
Yeah.
Which I, it's
I was fitting, like, wait, my right? boyfriends? Where my boyfriends live? My exes?
Let's just end it with that. Done. Perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
That's hilarious. Like, I had this thought, and I'm curious to see what you think, because I relate sort of what you do in my head. It's very similar to my time in the Marines. High stress.
It is. It's very
a lot of responsibility, you know, like this kind of stuff. And I have these two very different worlds, which are like a lot of my friends from my time in the military are like fascinated with what I do as a producer and all this stuff. Now they're like, wow, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, this place sucks most of the time. Not that it didn't suck doing that too. Different kind of suck, right? But it was also amazing at times.
I know exactly what you mean. I know exactly what you mean.
But what I was going to say is that is something I guess there's just a little bit of a God complex thing that happens when you pick up rank in the military. So I imagine like what a surgeon would be like. No offense to all the amazing surgeons out there.
I've thought about transferring to surgery. That thing stops.
Like, LA has this, you know, culture about it, like in Hollywood, where in order to stand out, you need to be the center of the universe. And so if you have
serving only yourself,
you're serving yourself, and mm-hmm. it's no yes. individual mm-hmm. person's fault. In my opinion, right. it's a byproduct of the business. And what you get is a lot of people not listening. And like, I think it's extremely damaging, especially for children, in my opinion, mm-hmm. to be exposed to that at like a really young age, if you don't have good parenting, right? But even as an adult, like, especially coming off, you know, the back of like a successful show, and then all of a sudden you're met with, holy shit, like, it doesn't mean I'm guaranteed another job, and no one gives a shit. You know, like, I found in my 20s, LA to be a, just that. Like, you know, you go to a restaurant and everyone else is looking at who else is walking in, right?
Yeah.
And like, I'm just trying to sit here and shoot the shit. And I can't say I wasn't guilty of that sometimes.
Oh, yeah. You get into it. You become a part of the system.
That's what I mean. You
unless you're like her, which is a unicorn.
But you can become absorbed into it. And, you know, I think there came a point where I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, this is not real life. This is stupid. I think you can have a healthy relationship to this business, make movies, and still be decent. And like, encourage others to do the same.
Well, I also think what I saw you do was start to find your mentors that represented that versus the icons that were shoved down your throat in film school.
Well, and you have to understand, like, at one point I was mentored by the most powerful person in media, like literally. So for me, like, my bar.
Do you want to say who that is?
No, I don't. My bar.
You're just trying to get everybody to name drop.
No tea. We have no tea left for the cut down on TikTok.
I'll eventually get there when society kind of like, you know, fixes itself.
Yeah.
And then they're able to just accept that. But for me, it was like a steep decline. It was like, oh, I've started here. So that must mean everything goes like this. And it's just not reality. Right. But what I was going to ask, long story short, is it really, like, I don't even know, I don't know if you experienced that same thing that I'm discussing, but like, is it almost refreshing to like go into the hospital and do something? I think both jobs are meaningful actually, but something that's objectively meaningful, like, and kind of get away from that?
Sometimes yes. Sometimes yes. Like I said before, the unfortunate byproduct, and I'm sure, because there are a lot of parallels, I feel like, with, you know, firefighters, police officers, military, with nurses. You do see a lot of flaws in the system itself. And also a byproduct, I feel like, of the pandemic is something broke in people. They got really selfish and really self-serving. And so that's made it difficult and less rewarding, to be honest. And I'm not doing it for a thank you, but when people are very expectant and they treat it, you know, like you're their cruise director rather than somebody who's there to take care of something that they really need help with, that becomes more challenging to have that mm-hmm. feeling. But having said that, I was talking to a doc the other day, and he said, you know, he goes, you know, it's a good shift if you can help one person, if you feel like you really made an impact to one person. Mm-hmm. And on one hand, I feel like that's not enough. And on the other hand, I feel like that's a good goal. To feel like that. And then at the same time, there's a lot of impact that you do that you find out weeks later made an impact, but at the time you had no idea you made any kind of difference whatsoever.
Are you at liberty to say an example per se?
Well, an example of what?
Of that, like, feeling like weeks later you found out that that made a difference.
Yeah. I mean, I've had patients that I will just spend like an extra 5 minutes with or something. When I don't have that to spend, I'm running around like a chicken with my head cut off, you know, the sky is falling, like that kind of feeling of trying to like balance a lot of different things. And I'll spend an extra 5 minutes just listening about something. And, you know, I had a friend of mine that worked up in the ICU where the patient ended up going, and she texted me and she was like, "Hey, did you have this guy?" And I was like, yeah. I had him like a week ago. And she's like, yeah, he was just telling me about the nurse that he had done in the ER and how sweet she was, because you sat and talked to him about his daughter. That he was so freaked out because he was a guy that like he was in there and like I think it was last year and he had lung cancer. And so he was freaked out about being at the hospital because it was like during COVID and he had lung cancer and he was like really worried about that. And I just sat and I talked to him about his daughter, and that got him distracted from being freaked out about being there. And she just said that made a big difference. And that's the kind of thing where it's like, to me, I went home that shift and was like, God, did I even do anything? Did I help anybody? I don't know. Like, but then, you know, I had no idea the ripple effect. And the only reason I knew is because she texted me and told me that, because of some like side statement he had said. So there's a lot of times that I feel like, and my mom reminds me of this too, that there's a lot of times that I'll do things and I may never know the good that it had. And I have to be okay with that. But, you know, so sometimes it is really rewarding, and then sometimes you go home and you feel like, did I even help anybody today? Mm. And there's a lot of limitations to how you can help people because of the red tape, because of, you know, the healthcare industry, and because of a lot of that. And so there are frustrations there too. But yeah, long story short, sometimes you go home and you're like, wow, that was a really rewarding day. And then sometimes you go home and you're like, wow, I just helped drunks and addicts for a few hours, and they're going to go out and drink again and come back to the ER. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's kind of a dichotomy of both. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I have two disparate questions to ask.
Okay.
One, does it help like dealing with it? Because I never had the perspective that you have of currently doing both things, right? There are different mm-hmm. times. Does it help like you with the inevitable, you know, rejection or waiting like of our business to go into the hospital and have the high stakes environment? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I figured it. Okay.
Yeah, it does. It's easier to not care if you get a project when you go in and there's more. I hate to say it because, like, acting is really important to me. Mm. But I know in the grand scheme of things, like, it's a movie, it's a television show, like, life will go on.
Interesting.
So going to the hospital, if I lose a job or something, yeah, it's heartbreaking in the moment. It always is. But it's a lot easier to move on when I go to the hospital and I see a lot. It gives me a lot more perspective.
Right. And then my second question is, you probably get asked this a lot, are there a ton of auditions for a hospital show, you know?
Oh,
you know,
we've totally talked about this. Like, why is she not on a hospital
yeah,
show?
Yeah, are they coming your way? And if Shonda. Not, who do I need to fucking call? Yeah. Like at least to be like a consulting producer on a show.
I mean,
like,
they always have like, a really beautiful, sassy redhead that's causing trouble
are
and
you,
hooking up. I know this sounds so weird and arbitrary, but I know the character on Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, I know it too.
And she has that hot boyfriend. It's like, why are you?
Is this happening? Are you getting these kinds
of? No, I get asked this all the time. And I do feel like it is such a missed opportunity because I've had a few of them. It's funny because I've had a lot of the like Chicago Fire, Chicago Med. Like I've had a lot of like those auditions lately, which inevitably have not gotten, which is fine. You know what I like? I said,
there'll
I'm
be
a big
Chicago
believer.
Florist soon. Chicago.
Yeah, yeah,
store.
Totally. Yeah, one exactly. My dad loves all of those shows. He watches all of them except Med. It's too bloody for him. Can't watch that.
Okay.
One, which is very funny. He always passes out when he gets his blood drawn, which I make very much fun of him for. But so yeah, I've auditioned for them. And it's funny because you know how you hear actors talk about like, oh, you know, I'll say medical when I'm like rehearsing because it's so hard to like get all those terms down. Mm-hmm. It's very easy for me to memorize those lines because I say those words all day. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right. It's such an easy layup for them to hire you.
Like, that's what, so it is to me kind of a market, but
yeah,
because it's like the best kind of method research you can do. But
I mean, two hires in one, consulting, producer, actor.
Well, I had people at work when I first started asking me if I was researching something. I've had other people accuse me that I'm just like going undercover for an acting job. I'm like, no, I'm not. So, I mean, I do feel like that would be the logical like joining of the two, but you know, no, nobody's been like knocking down my door for that.
I mean, come
I'm
on.
Sorry. Who accused you of going undercover? Could you imagine?
That's some LA narcissism right there.
It was like, yeah, it was, I mean, some of it's been like social media comment nonsense. And that was like early on. But also too, like when I started at the hospital, I never said anything that I was an actor. Because also, too, right. How do you get that in a conversation? Hi, I'm Jennifer. Yeah. I was on a Disney show. Like, what an a-hole. You know what I mean? Like, who would do that? Like, that's not a natural progression, you know? So yeah. I just never told anybody. And so, like, over time, like, it would kind of, like, trickle in. If people, like, I showed this picture of, like, all of our coworkers together, and my son saw it, and he said, do you know who that is? And then it becomes this, like, snowball thing. So, like, even
that's
now,
that's a fun
like,
way to years, do it, though.
So, but even years now into the job, I'll have people be like, why didn't you tell me this? And I'm like, and I literally will always say, how would I have told you that? And not sound like the biggest douchebag. You know what I mean? So I think it was because of the fact that I just wasn't saying anything. And I kind of was like, there was like one coworker that was like, kind of said it half joking. That was like, are you doing research for a job? Is that what this is? And I was like, yeah, I went to nursing school for 2 years and graduated.
Hey, talk about fucking method.
Deep undercover.
I look at Jared Leto.
You know what would be hilarious though is if you actually got on one of these shows as like this role and then you do it in real life and your patient comes up, he's like, what the fuck? And he thinks like a TV doctors or a TV nerd. That would be so meta. I need
you
to
know,
see
I had one of people ask me all the time if like patients recognize me, and they do sometimes. One of my favorites though, talking about like meta and like messing with their brains. I had this girl that, and this doesn't like violate HIPAA because I'm not mentioning names or anything. Which HIPAA is like patient protection and all that kind of thing.
Yep. Oh, yes.
But anyway, so she she came in and she had like, because we're right by Universal Studios. So we get all the like, oh, I went on this roller coaster, vomited my brains out. Now I'm here. But we do all the time. So she had, I guess she'd done a bunch of edibles and like a bunch of like, she'd done edibles and like two other kind of drugs on top of it. So she was high as a kite. And then went to Universal and like, they were like, absolutely not. And then like called 911 and got her to the ER. So she was my patient and I was taking care of her and she looked at me like this and she goes, she was tripping balls. It took her a second. She was like, you're on that magic show, right? And I was like, no, that's not me. I just was like, no, that's not me. And she goes, really? She goes, you look just like her. And I was like, it's not me. She goes, like she was processing so many things.
This is the TikTok. We're cutting this down and putting this on TikTok. Yeah.
Like it was so, I mean, I've had so many weird patient encounters where like they've recognized me. And sometimes like if it's an appropriate moment, I'll cop to it and be like, yeah, that was me, you know? And it's nice because they're having a bad day and it's something that makes them smile. So that's really nice. But that one was like, she's high as a kite. She's not going to remember any of this. I'm just
that
gonna
is
say no.
Fucking hilarious.
Good job, Jennifer.
But it was so, like, because for the whole time I had her, she wouldn't let it go. She just was, like, kept looking at me like I was, like, some kind of, like, alien creature. Like, she oh, she was tripping.
Her eyes
balls.
Were popping out of her head.
Right. Yeah, like, she was so high. And I don't know if she remembers that. Or she probably just
TikTok,
thought she was, like,
do your
so
thing.
High. Yeah. Yeah, she probably just thought I was so high. I thought I saw Harper from Wizards, but I you know. But, yeah, it was ridiculous.
I want to know what... are you doing 10 years from now in an ideal world? Five years, 10 years from now.
Yeah, sure. And where is the state of the world? Please tell me. Because
oh
I have
God,
kids.
No darkness.
Jennifer, don't you realize at any crucial point in my life, I'm going to call you? That's going to be
no,
it.
That's
I'm going to text
that's
you
fine.
In the middle of the night.
What's going on with this Ukraine situation,
totally
Jennifer?
It was during the middle of the night, too, if I remember correctly.
It was, girl.
Yeah,
I remember, like, I was going to bed, like, getting ready to go to sleep, and I get this, like, text, and I was like, why is Christy texting me? This is really weird. And she's like, the sky is falling. What's going on? And I was like, it's fine. It's okay.
Yeah, pretty much.
But as far as 10 years from now, I don't know, man. I mean, if you had told me when I was 19 that this was where I would be now, I would have been like the girl in the ER tripping balls. I would have been like, hell no. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Because remember when I was 19, 18, I thought I was going to do my Freeform and ABC show. So, I mean, I didn't know. So that's
we
the
all
thing
did.
Is like, I have, Right? Like, so, I mean, we all have that, like, weird whatever like what happened? Illusion. Totally. Yeah. So, and I've had those moments, too, where I'm like, wait, where? How did I get here? But, yeah, so I don't know, man. Like, I would love to say what I want to happen in the next 10 years. I would love to be able to make my money from acting and then be able to use the nursing with things like Doctors Without Borders and like really being able to use it for like diabetes advocacy, making sure insulin's affordable. Like that's something that I would really love to use the nursing for. But then again, like I said, it's something that would have to, a lot of things would have to happen for me to be able to, you know, support myself and still be able to do that. So I would love to be able to find a greater balance of acting full time and then nursing where I really felt like I could be more impactful. I feel like I'm impactful now, but I feel like there's always a way to be more so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, wait. What? Where do we find you?
Yeah, so obviously TikTok.
He's like, focus. So yeah, TikTok. It's just Jennifer Stone on Instagram and then Jennifer L. Stone, I believe, on TikTok. So, and then my Twitter is my name as well.
Not to be confused with Jennifer H. Stone, which is my character on Cadet Kelly.
Oh, that's right. You were Jennifer. Yeah. Yeah, your character.
I think it was Jennifer H. Stone.
Dick Wolf, this is for you. Just fucking do it, dude. I mean, like, it's so easy.
Yeah.
And it makes so much sense.
Yeah.
So just, you know, fucking do it. Okay? Dick, thank you.
I feel like that would be the perfect life's and God's sense of humor for me to end up on a medical show. But who knows? We'll see.
I mean, it would be awesome. And then 25 seasons of that shit, you're making like Ellen Pompeo $30 million a year.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, that's the move.
Wait, Jen, do you do like fun TikTok comedy about like as if you were on a show? Because I feel like that's a funny series you could do on TikTok that might get you. This is almost a side of this podcast, but like,
yeah,
like if she,
she's
if,
giving you the
it's
tips,
almost like, well, no, but with TikTok, it's like if you do something, sometimes it helps out create people's perceptions of you. And it's almost like you can lean into the fact that she's like not on the show kind of thing.
I've seen some of yours. They're funny.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. But you're trying to say like more nursing stuff? Is what you're
saying? Yeah, yeah. To make people realize how like if you were on the show or if your character was actually in an ER nurse from Wizards. You know?
I mean, that's a good idea. I'm still figuring out TikTok, to be honest. I think a lot of mine are just like a sardonic viewpoint of filters and like whenever they do those like who would I date, you know, or like smash or pass.
Like, smash or pass.
Yeah, I think I've done like three of those and everybody is like always gotten really involved and I'm just like I don't know why I was so excited about like smash or pass, like Sully from Monsters Inc. Like I don't understand why that's like
you'd
so
smash
you would
him,
never
though.
Be with a Sully.
You would never
smash. No, because I'm not a pass, you wouldn't not smash a furry Sully. Move on.
Oh, you don't want to smash Sully.
Pass.
Oh.
No, I'm not a furry. It's not my scene. John Goodman, maybe. Sully, no.
I think he would smash John Goodman.
Artist, actor, smash, not real
actor. Smash.
Yeah.
Schmactor.
I mean, who doesn't want John Goodman?
You'd smash John Goodman.
Yeah, there's a big difference between actor smash and real smash.
No actor smash. Yes. No actor smash.
Schmactor smash. Schmutch my. We'll schmuck you soon.
I love it.
We love you so much, Jennifer Stone. Thank you for being unvulnerable. And we are rooting for you.
Thank you.
All right, Jen.
Stay
we love
safe.
You.
Love you guys too.
Stay safe, of course.
And, keep
and I'll text you at 2 a.m., okay?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Do
expect
it.
That
text me all of your medical questions.
We love
this
you.
So much fun.
We miss you. We hope to see you soon.
Vulnerable is hosted by me, Christy Carlson Romano, produced by Elizabeth Joy Windham, and executive produced by Brendan Rooney. Our sound engineer and editor is Elizabeth Joy Windham, and our video editor is Eduardo Gamba. Follow Vulnerable wherever you listen to podcasts, so you can join me every week for a Vulnerable Conversation. And be sure to follow Vulnerable on Instagram and TikTok at The Vulnerable Podcast. And make sure to tune in to my YouTube to watch the video version.